still working. I wanted to ask you about growing up in Sydney
In Sydney.
and some of the sounds in Sydney. I've been told that the sound of, I'm a musician, so I'm interested in the sounds of everything, not just music. I've been told that the sound of the steel, the steel plant would have been incredibly loud. Is that right? Do you remember
The
those?
sound of the noises.
Yeah, the noises.
Well, see, we lived on Park Street. Well, you would know that. You know where Park Street is in Sydney? No. You know where the synagogue is in Sydney on Whitney Avenue? Well, Park Street is parallel with it's the next street down below, parallel with Whitney Avenue. And that was far away, well, quite a distance from the steel plant. No, the only connection that I ever had with the steel, well, growing up, was the manager of one of the managers who came from England lived across the street from us, and I went to school with his daughter. I don't know, Gordon was his name at the time, Harold Gordon. I don't know. They were only here for a few years, many years, and then they it was I think the steel plant owned the building. When they left, somebody else moved in. No, when I was growing up in school, not so much in the grades until it was only the high school. There were schools in the pier, and most of the steel workers in Sydney lived in the pier. Their kids went there. It wasn't until they came to high school that they came to Sydney Academy, which was what I attended. And I remember the first while, and I don't know why I remember that, but I do. The kids who lived in Sydney looked down on the kids from the pier who came to high school, because they were from the pier and their parents were steel workers. Those who lived in Sydney felt they were socially a little bit above because their parents, there weren't too many of the steel workers who lived in Sydney. Most at that time lived in the pier, but eventually they did move some to Sydney. But the Sydney, either their parents worked or they had, worked in stores or they, had some kind of I don't know. But they did look upon the kids who came as, I'd say, I hate that expression, but second-class citizens. And yet some of the smartest kids, and one who used to compete with me all the time was from the pier. Not that I was that smart, but she was very competitive, very nice black girl, lovely, lovely girl. And we kept up friendship many years, and then she died a number of years ago. Dixon was her name. We always corresponded, but yeah, they did look. Yeah, I would say that there was a feeling of, and don't forget, I only went to school with the Protestants because I wasn't allowed to go to Catholic schools, and I don't know if that if you could. But when it came to high school, I'm not sure if Holy Angels was there. I can't remember. Did Holy Angels was there when I was in high school? There weren't too many high schools either. That Holy Angel, but that was only for girls to begin with. But there, I would kind of go out on a limb and say that many people in Sydney looked down upon the people in the pier. And also because it was like a melting pot of, as you know, Polish, Ukrainian, whatever. Whereas Sydney, they were Catholic or Protestants or Jews. It wasn't until later they'd start, like you say, the Messianic, the whatever the different, branches of different cultures came. But I think, but we all went to school together, and it wasn't overtly visible, but they used to make used to make remarks about even today. Well, of course, I don't know too many people that live in the pier anymore, but I know once in a while you speak to somebody and I always, they'll say, "Where do you live?" And I say, "Well, we live in Park Street." "Where did you live?" And they would kind of hesitate. "Oh, well, I lived in the pier, Oh," I said, "Well, nothing wrong with the pier." But internally, I think they did feel there was And that's because the way people, the behavior of other people towards them. Now, you'd have to speak to a steelworker's family to find out. I can't speak for them. When I came to Glace Bay in 47, and as I say, we started in 67, we started the organization. There were a board, 10 members on the board. Didn't matter. I don't even think, maybe they knew I was Jewish. I don't know. At the beginning, I didn't even know the people on the board, what their religion was. And it didn't matter. I never knew what church they went to. I never asked them. I didn't even ask them if they went to church or wherever. But after a few years, I will say one thing, and I really felt very humble about this. When we started to plan our meetings for September, invariably the first question somebody would say, "Well, Shirley, when are your holidays? We won't have a meeting during your New Year's. We'll have it in another." And every year they used to always check with me, and I thought that was a very respectful way to to have people want to express that what their faith is their faith and what my faith is my faith, and why shouldn't we work together? And obviously it worked out very well, because we never, that's one thing, I'd look it up in the calendar, so we never had our board meeting if it was like Rosh Hashanah, because that was, the beginning in September, usually in September. So that was a very nice way. But also, I've said this many, many times, people I've met and became friendly, it didn't matter if your husband was a minor, or if your friend was the wife of the doctor, because the doctor was the highest, on the scale of whatever at that time, not so much nowadays, but it was then, everybody worked together. I found that anyway. Now look, maybe I'm a little Pollyannish in that respect. I don't know, but I can only tell you about my own gut reaction, and the people I worked with, and I know like the nursery schools. We had a lot of nursery schools in those days, in all different areas of town, because the lady who started the organization, her vision was that nursery schools should start in the neighborhood the children live, because that's where they're going to school. See, and Glace Bay is made up, when I came to Glace Bay, my mother-in-law used to always say, I think number seven. She said, someday I'll be a number seven, I think. What was the number? And I finally remember saying to Joe, "What's your mother talking about?" He said, "Well, that's where the Jewish cemetery is." She didn't call it Passchendaele. First of all, she couldn't spell it, I don't think, to begin with. But she wouldn't even say Passchendaele. But, they identified the areas by the mine, whatever the mine number that's. That was the way they identified it. Sydney was different. Sydney had the steel plant, which primarily was the pier. But Glace Bay, the mines affected, the company houses were all over the place. So I found that the... And funny, we were talking about, because as I say, we did the company store, the book at my book club. And I tell you the truth, I hadn't read the book. I've heard some stories, but I hadn't read the book. And it's pretty gruesome. Well, very truthful and factual, because it took him years. The man who wrote, the author is from London. And he did a lot of research, took him years to do research. And the company store, the way they, I don't have to tell you the story, but the way they treated them, it was awful. And... I know for the first few years, on Friday night, and the Jewish stores were always, they were open. I think most of them probably, that's when they did business, because that's when the miners got paid. But they're always drunk. and there was nothing but up and down Commercial Street. There were just three sheets to the wind, you know. And they used to say that some of them, the majority, when they got their pay, they gave so much to their wife and they took the rest out, and but they were fine the next day or the day, you know, the day after. But that was the life of the miner, you know. And people in the town just accepted it, and I don't think thought less of them, but that was just their, you know, behavioral pattern for those who worked in the mine. Because go work in the mine, oh God, when you think of it, way down there. You know, my father and I went down one day. Oh, he didn't even stay for the day. I think he came up. He says, he'd never go back in the mine. Couldn't. And as far as I know, now I could be wrong, I've never heard of any of the other Jewish immigrants who came who went to work in the mine, except I told you this one man from New Waterford. And I don't know. Oh, yeah, he must have been an immigrant, because I don't think he wasn't a Canadian. They couldn't, I don't know what it is, they couldn't tolerate being down, you know, down there, or you know, were they so ingrained themselves when they came from Europe for a better life and a richer life, you know, to do better things, or And you know, I've been asked this question many, many times. Oh, many, it's exaggerating, but quite often. Why is education so important to the Jewish people? Have you come across that question? You know? So I said, well, the only answer that we can give, that I have read, and you know, that I think from my own experience, I know from my own father, let's say my own parents, whatever, it was only their knowledge that they had in their brains that they could migrate from, you know, leave Europe, come here. What else did they have? They came with nothing. And they knew in order to have a better life, you know, you had to have an education, and that was like the passage to a better life. But you see, one woman, you know, was not giving me an air, we were having just a friendly talk, but she said those who came over to the steel plant and the miners, not talking about the foreigners, but they came from Scotland, from Ireland, from England to work in the mine, they didn't think there was a life beyond that. But why is it like somebody like my father-in-law or any of the other Jewish immigrants, that wasn't for them? They knew that their passage to a better life was through education for their children. If you know, they didn't go to college, they didn't even go to school. When you think of it now, who was it was telling me the other day about, oh, I know, this friend of mine that was telling me in synagogue, her grandmother, you know, who died years ago, they had a store in Charlottesville, a little, well, like we call it, confectioner's store, believe me, it wasn't, but whatever you call it. She couldn't read or write. But she said she was at that cash register, and she could, you know, she could count money, and she knew, you know, she was able to do that, but never went to school and couldn't read or write. She said, I wonder how my grandmother could do all that and run a successful business. Well, her husband died. He was there for a while, and then he died. She said, I don't know how she did that. You couldn't do that today. Somebody be running a business and not being able to read or write or count. Well, of course, you can have machines. They know in grocery stores, for God's sake, they got a machine. They got cashiers who can't even, if your bill is $19.50 or $19.70, let's put it that way, and you gave them a $20 bill with the, let's say, 30 cents, they don't know how to figure out, you know, well, not 19, they don't know how to give you change if you give them coins, you know. Because they can't, what are they teaching them in school? Well, they're certainly not, well, won't go into that. But I know the cashiers, it's happened to me many times. So now I stop doing it because it's too confusing. I mean, they get confused and they got me confused. They cannot, without that machine adding up what it's adding, they can't figure out how to give you back. Have you ever had that? Well, you shop a lot in grocery? I guess you do. Have you ever had that experience?
All the time.
Yeah. So, isn't there something wrong?
Maybe.
Or is that just the way it has to be?
I don't think it has to be anyway, but it's the way it's turned out, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Well, I know that, you know, well, look at schools. They don't teach. They tell me there's no spelling out, so they can't spell. I don't, writing, God forbid, I don't know, think they can even write. And I know we give like scholarship to the high schools, several organizations that I belong to. Not all the time, but most of the time, the recipient will send you a thank you note. Well, you're lucky if you get one. I find the last few years getting less and less, but years ago, right away you'd get a, you know, very nice note, from the recipient. Well, you wouldn't think that person is graduating grade 12 going to university, because the note was like somebody in grade 5 would write, with about five or maybe four or five simple sentences, because they don't even know how to, they can't even express themselves. I found that anyway. Now, that maybe doesn't apply to everybody, but it applies to the majority, and they can't write. The spelling is atrocious, that's one thing. I must say, God, we had spelling bees. And to this day, well, I don't write, I'm not a writer, but I think it's because the way we were, be able to taught spelling and everything. If I get a note, or if the word is incorrectly spelt, I can distinguish it immediately. I can tell you right away that's wrong. Now, maybe I don't know the exact right. I haven't. That people think that's a Bible over there, but that's my dictionary, and I use it a lot. Because now that I'm getting older, sometimes I can't remember if it's two S's or two T's or two, so I run to my dictionary. But, we were taught to spell that I can recognize. If it's misspelled, I know right away that is a misspelled word. Nowadays, now they tell me, what is it, tweet? I don't know what they do. Well, I had an experience, and it just, proves so many things are happening in this world. I have to accept them, but it bothers me. I was going for blood work. So here, when you go for blood work, you sometimes wait for 2 hours to even get in there, or at least an hour and a half, sometimes 2 hours. And this was not too long ago. And three young girls came and sat opposite me, when you're waiting. And I knew I was going to have to wait a long time. What could I do? I'm not sure if they were high school or junior high, because you can't tell, they've got shorts up to here, and this is in the summertime. Three girls, and one of them went, and you have to get a number. So the three of them sat opposite me, three girls, and I'm looking at them, and I guess I must have said good morning, and they kind of smiled. They pulled out whatever they had. I waited for an hour and a half, those three, and they were doing this. They never said one word to each other in 1 hour and a half, sitting up. Because I was, was right close. They're facing me. They never spoke one word to each other. And I was telling my friend, she said, well, they were sending messages to each other on those little things. But is that what's happening to the young people today? Do you ever?
Some people.
Does it make sense?
I don't think I'm not sure.
Because you don't have children yet, but someday when you have children, would you want your children to be doing all that? Who knows?
I hope not.
Well. By the way, you plan to get married sooner?
Oh, we've set a date.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
What?
August 31st of next year.
Oh, 14.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very. We'd married in Toronto, of course.
Just outside of Toronto. We'll get married we met at a Reformed Jewish summer camp that I've been going to I went to for about a decade.
Oh, what's it called?
Camp George. It's run by the Union for Reformed Judaism.
So whereabouts is it?
It's two and a half hours north
of
Toronto.
Oh.
In Muskoka. It's on the lake.
Oh, so. Must be beautiful.
It is.
So they do have wedding, it's...
This will be their first wedding there.
So. Really? Isn't that romantic? So.
And it holds about 500 people, so...
Are you going to have that large a wedding?
I hope not.
But listen, between your side and his and her side,
yeah, well,
does she have a large family?
Yeah.
So that's
it'll
nice.
Be a big wedding.
Yeah.
But people we love. So.
Yeah. Well, that's very, very nice. Well, these are the happy times.
Yeah.
Actually, the old phrase, it's the best years of your life, but we don't realize it, we don't at the time. Not that it's maybe the best, but it's, I guess before you kind of settle down and you have, you know, more responsibilities, and with responsibilities, worries, and, you know, whatever. So it really is, it is, it should be the best time of your life. So that's, yeah. Well, now that you're back, you see her more often, of course.
Yeah.
Than being away, which is very, very nice. So how about your, now he's younger or older?
Your he's brother. Older.
He's the older brother, yeah. Okay. So he's in California.
That's right. He moved to San Francisco. I'll see him in 2 weeks.
Yeah. So he's also working on a doctorate, or what is he doing?
He's almost finished.
And what, is he in music?
Psychology.
Oh, he's in psychology. But he's is he more a musician, or was he, I thought one of you was going into music or something, or maybe?
Oh, that would be me.
So that was you.
Oh. Music and anthropology.
Oh.
A mixture of those.
Okay. So he's in, okay. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty, deep and devious, is it? Anthropology?
For me?
No, for him.
He's a psychologist.
He's a psychologist.
And I'm the
anthropologist. I think I took a year of anthropology at university. Ooh. I can't remember one thing. I think something about Egypt. That's about all I can remember. Why did I take anthropology? But I did. Mm. That's right. So how did anthropology get into research? It's the human body?
Well, anthropology is more about stories. It's more about the kind of work I'm doing right now here.
Okay.
It's about collecting stories and memories.
So it's not about factual. Well, it's about people.
It's about people.
It's
the story of people and their communities.
Right. Because I think we had to study something in Egypt for a while.
It must have been something more archaeological.
Probably. Yeah. I think it seems. If I can look, I can't remember, but I did take it.
Well, they all mix together at one point.
Right. Yeah. So that, okay. Uh-huh. So, and I'm sure they pay, my business, and you get paid for this to do the research? Mm-hmm. Wonder, well, otherwise, how would you live? This is you. Very, very nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
So and you feel it's very, you know, you feel your visit here has been fruitful?
I think so.
Yeah, but it's a slow process, isn't it?
It is a slow process, but why? There's no reason to rush anything. The joy of this kind of work is that there's, it's not like journalism where I have to get a story.
No deadline. You don't have a deadline.
It's about how people feel, and it's about when they want to talk about these things. So I wouldn't want to put pressure on anyone or anything. It's just for people to think about what they'd like to think about.
Well, so when you're complete with all this, then what are you going to be doing? Is there just like one area that you're going to
I have a focus. I'm interested in, what we're doing now is making recordings. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in how people have done that since the beginning of recording technology.
Okay.
And particularly portable recordings, so recordings that aren't made in studios,
mm-hmm.
Which started in the mid-1940s. And
yeah.
So I'm writing a history of how people have done that and what that means, how
so
they collect stories.
So you're starting in the 1940s.
1946 is the year.
Yeah, just when the war was over. Mm-hmm. Just to say at the conclusion of the war.
Yeah. So.
Oh, well.
So that's what I'm building up to, and we'll see where that takes me. But I'm looking at different prospects.
So the field that you plan to make a living, it's a field that is going to be needed in the future,
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope people will recognize the need for it.
Yeah.
So far, so good. I'm able to make a living and do these projects.
Mm-hmm. We'll see. Very, very nice. So when you say you're going back to Cambridge?
I'll go back to Cambridge in 2014 in the fall. So a year from now.
Oh, so will you have to be there just the whole year?
Under a year, actually.
Under a year.
By that time, if I've done everything I hope
to do,
I'll have finished the written work, mm-hmm. and I'll just have to edit it and prepare it for the final examination.
So are they pretty strict and stern, with the...
They will be.
Is it,
They ask you to, in your first year, to write a chapter mm-hmm. of your book.
Oh.
Which is what the whole goal is to write a book about your topic, or a dissertation.
Yeah.
And they take a look at that first chapter, and if they like it, they let you keep going.
So what is that here? They have to do a thesis, is it, or?
That's right, yeah. That's so the thesis is a book.
That's, okay, yeah. So that's what, okay.
If all goes well, it should become a book.
Yeah.
Or something.
To that and you have to have a title and all that stuff?
Yeah, yeah.
So what is your title?
Mine is, it's Techniques in Portable Recording, Theory and Creative Practice.
Okay, so it's the practical application of what you're hoping to get your doctorate.
That's right. Yeah.
In a in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Is that what it is? Okay. Mm-hmm.
We'll see what people do with it.
Well, it's never wanted to be a doctor, obviously.
Not that kind of doctor.
Not the way your dad works.
Yeah.
It's
like I always tell him, I can't take over the family business.
Yeah.
So I'll do my own work.
I know. Yeah.
But they've been very supportive.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, that's I'm sure they would be. They're bright enough to know that you are you and they are they. And that's unfortunately. But I think more parents are realizing that. Like it wasn't.
I hope so.
Like years ago, the Jewish people around here, they wanted you to be a doctor, or they wanted their son to be a doctor, and they used to say, are you a doctor? Are you a doctor, or are you a tooth doctor? They never said dentist. They'd say, are you a doctor, or are you a tooth doctor? that's when they came from the old country, because I used to hear that expression,
I guess that makes me a music doctor.
Yeah, right. A music doctor is right. Well, it's wonderful that, and Norman still, do they still perform when he's there every Sunday?
All the time.
Once a week, is it?
Every Sunday and every Tuesday, or every Monday or Tuesday.
And they perform twice a week.
That's right.
Wow.
Plays and with he makes two different ensembles.
But he makes time.
Yeah, it's incredible. That's his rule.
Yeah.
Well, and he plays at the synagogue.
Yeah. Isn't that? Oh. You all belong the same synagogue? Is it?
I haven't chosen one just yet. My fiance and I are shopping around.
You
need to find one that's closer to our house.
Yeah, I know. And where you're young, you don't think of joining. Well, I have a little something for you.
Okay.
In that envelope.
Oh, okay.
Well, I don't know if you're going to use it or not, but I guess I'm sentimental at heart.
Oh, marvelous. This is wonderful.
Well, I don't know. Do you wear a yarmulke in your shul?
Yeah, absolutely. Of course.
Well, you know what that's... Oh, wait, and I have to give you is the explanation of the colors. And that's just... I didn't know if you'd... Because we're not going to, there's no show. I don't think we're going to be making any more, but we were able. I mean, this is what the world is, and I think I love the positive anyway. I've always been a very positive, I hope, person. These two sisters, Jewish girls, who are moving to Toronto, they had a fabric store, and they closed a couple of years ago, and I said to her, could you get me some of the K. Breton tartan? And we'll just keep it. I don't know, the yardage. She said, oh, yes. She said the man that they get it from, they order it from, whatever you call it, lives in Montreal. And she said, I'll certainly get the K. Breton. I'll get the material for you. And he is, I don't know if he's a Muslim or he's a Hindu. I don't know, whatever he is. He's one or the other. I'm not sure. Do you know he wouldn't take any money? Because she must have said that the synagogue was being sold and we wanted to have we call them skull caps for him. She didn't say yarmulkes, I don't think. And, he refused to take the money. He said, no, he liked to give them. So we got enough material. We had 100 and some made. So, when they're gone, well, I guess I don't know if we're going to make any more. But I laughed because my niece, Michelle, in Toronto, she said lately when... She goes, I don't know what show she belongs to, but not that show, but she's invited different things. When she walks in, when she sees what that yarmulke on their head. Oh, she runs right over. She said, you must be from Cape Breton. She said, it's like, you know, it's such an identification of something from home. So anyway, I thought, you know what, I'd like to give that to you.
It's wonderful. Thank you so much.
Well, and I hope you'll... Well, the main thing is I didn't even know if you use a yarmulke, but
I do. I do every time I'm in for Shabbat. And in Shul, my fiancé and I host... we have a havara that comes over for Shabbat dinner.
And I don't know... So the women wear yarmulkes as well?
Not many. Some.
No, but some do,
We always give the option.
Yeah, right.
People decide whether they'd like to.
So do you count... Women are counted, of course, in the Shul. Yes. Mind you, they do that in Sydney, too.
Okay.
They never used to. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what it's like in Ontario, but in Nova Scotia, because it's a statute of the government or something, the lawyer here had to go to Halifax. It had to change in order to allow the bylaws, to include it in the bylaws or whatever you call it, of the synagogue. They had to go and just make changes in the law, the government, for women to be allowed to.
Really?
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, so I don't know if that affects your province. Probably not. Maybe that's been done years ago, but it was never done in Nova Scotia until about 2-3 years ago. So now women can, you know, conduct the services, or they can have an aliyah, you know. Mm-hmm. Actually, there are more women Jewish in Sydney than men, because the men are dying and the women are living. Huh. I mean, that, you know, they're for whatever. So it's, so I just wonder, did you get it? Well, have you got a chance to look at that letter from the Beaton Institute?
Which one over there? Yeah. Yes. Well, I've seen it before.
Yes.